Welcome to Missing the Mouse. This is episode 3, and this is a very exciting episode because Brad just got back from Disneyland.
Woohoo! Man, and now I need a vacation from my vacation.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where I guess with my family, it's always been if we're going to go to Disney, we will get our money's worth, so I feel like I need to be there when the park opens, which I will say that we were not there when the park opened, but we were there pretty darn close, and we were there till the park closed for the 2 nights. So we actually did 1 day at California Adventure, 1 day at Disneyland proper, and, you know, just almost fell over the next day when we had to get an airplane and ride home. So, but, yeah, we started out at California Adventure our first day, and let's go ahead and call this missing the mouse tip number one for Disneyland that I found out anyway. The Mickey and Friends parking garage that is talked about so much on the web and everything apparently closes pretty darn early in the day. I feel like we got to the parks before the parks had actually opened. We're driving up before, you know, the, I think, 9 o'clock open time on that day. And that lot was already closed. And we found ourselves in the Simba lot. Which I, you know, most people don't know, but the Simba lot is actually located through downtown Disney. So main gate, downtown Disney, then Simba lot. And Simba lot, there is no tram. So let me just warn everyone, if you see that you're being directed to Simba lot, turn around, drive away, run screaming, and find any other lot. You know, I would have gladly paid, which of course, you know, Disney charges $16 now. For parking, so woohoo for that. In a lot without a tram.
Is that it?
Yes. Just $16. I don't know what the going rate at Walt Disney World is, but I feel like it's got to be close. And I don't know. Maybe I've always gotten there much earlier, but I don't think I've ever walked as far from the lot to something as I did through there. And of course, we're getting to the Simba lot. We go and park, and we begin walking in. And you have to walk through the entirety of downtown Disney to get to the main gate. The issue to me is they're making all of these people walk past all these things in downtown Disney. None of downtown Disney is open at this time. So they're walking people past merchandising opportunities and are not even giving me the, you know, if I wanted to stop off in World of Disney on the way in, I can't even do that because it's not even open yet. So Disney missed opportunity there, but the moral of the story is skip the Simba lot because it probably was only about a mile. And, you know, I don't know. It could have even been less than that to get to the main gate, but it felt like it was forever. But we did get to the main gate, bought our tickets, which it's very interesting at Disneyland, and I'll admit it's been a while since I've bought tickets at Walt Disney World, so maybe they've been doing – well, of course, I say this. We all remember they've moved to the Magic Bands now, so that's not going to be the case.
Right.
But at Disneyland, you actually – they take your name. They put your name on our 2-day one-park tickets. They put our name on the tickets. When we walked up to the gate, they asked for an ID from one of us to compare with the name on the ticket.
Wow.
Yeah, I have never seen this before. Again, I don't know. Maybe this was happening at Walt Disney World. I never experienced it personally. But yeah, they did this actually both days that we were there. They did compare our tickets to what, you know, to what was on our ID before they would let us through the gates. But you know, we got into the gates, walked into California Adventure, you know, which. The main gate to California Adventure, and in fact, entering into it, I felt like I was at Disney Hollywood Studios.
Really?
You know, I walked in expecting to see the big Mickey hat and the Chinese theater, you know, almost completely hidden behind it. Thanks for that, Disney. But that wasn't the case. But the actual entrance gate was very reminiscent to me of the Disney Hollywood Studios entrance. Anyway, so we came into the park and. We'll call this tip number two. There was a line going past the Carthay Circle restaurant there that's kind of at the entrance to the park. And I thought, well, that's interesting that there's – is this restaurant just really known for breakfast or something? No, that line that was going on for what seemed like forever was the Fast Pass line for the Radiator Springs Racers.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. So at Radiator Springs is actually our Cars Land, I should say, is at the back of the park. But they've put the Fast Pass for that attraction very, very much up front near the front of the park. It's actually located, I believe, next to Bugs Land, or it's a Bugs Life, you know, whatever that little Bugs Land is. That's where they've located the Fast Pass for this, because apparently it actually just goes out that quickly. They're only going to need it up there for, you know, 2 hours anyway before all Fast Passes are distributed. And we should have gotten in that line, because while we did experience some long waits in the parks, I don't think we had anything over maybe 60 minutes, with the exception of Radiator Springs Racers, because I, in my brilliance, thought, well, if everyone's waiting for Fast Passes, we should just go get in line for the attraction, you know? About, I would say, probably 75 minutes later, we did manage to get on to Radiator Springs Racers.
Now, I've heard Radiator Springs Racers is, for all intents and purposes, test track.
Yes, very much so.
Track design and the layout and everything, it's pretty much just test track, but cars themed.
Exactly, and I think that's a good thing, because, you know, test track to me has always been unimpressive at Epcot. It does some cool stuff. It's worth riding once, but past that, if the line gets very long, it's not an attraction that I just feel like I need to go to. I feel like Radiator Springs Racers, I would be more apt to go and wait in a little bit longer line, just because it does actually tie into a Disney property, into something dealing with Disney, rather than it's just a car driving around a track, which is kind of what Test Track gives you the feel of, because all that it's tied in with is GM.
You're driving a Chevrolet around a track. It's not just a car, it's a Chevrolet.
Oh, of course. Yeah, well, and Radiator Springs Racers, again, I would be surprised if it's not the exact same ride technology being used. And all that they've done is they've skinned it differently. So your car, they basically use those little, the new screen covers that they use on a lot of windows for cars. And it's, so your car has its eyes, it has its mouth, and, you know, you're going for a ride through Radiator Springs.
Well, so I've heard from people that the eyes and the mouths and stuff moving. I will say I've never been to California Adventure. When I went to Disneyland, I was only able to go to Disneyland. But I've heard the eyes and the mouths are just like amazing animatronic.
So they are. Now, as far as I know, your car doesn't actually, you know, of course the eyes aren't going to move, because again, it's just a paste on applique to the front windshield. And I don't believe your car's mouth moves, because there's no point at which your car talks. The other car's talking. That is awesome. It's great audio animatronics. It works really, really well. The one issue I will say that I did have, and it's not so much of an issue as something that I thought was weird, and you know, I brought it up to my wife, and she was like, "Oh yeah, that is really odd." Mater, he was totally audio animatronic, as in he had a mouth that moved and everything, whereas Lightning McQueen, they were projecting a mouth onto the car and using that projection to make the mouth move. And like I said, it's not a bad thing, but I would have liked to see them do with Lightning what they were doing with Mater, where they had actually, you know, designed the mouth and the mouth was actually moving on the car rather than having the projection. Because after they had done so well with Mater, it almost felt like a cop-out with Lightning to only have it projected on there.
Yeah, so are the, like with Mater's, was it rear projection? Like what could you gather it was the technology they were using?
Yeah, now with Mater, like I said, his was actually fully audio animatronic, so you know, they had built a mouth and animated it, so you know, it's whatever you know, rubber and everything that's used to actually make the mouth move. With Lightning, it looked like it was probably some projector that was up above us and was projecting down, and they had looked like they probably had put some sort of a transparent film on there so that the mouth would show up a little bit better on the bumper. But again, it was just some sort of projection or something. Hmm. And again, if they were all done that way, I probably would have never noticed it. But just the amazing job they did with Mater, and I think maybe there were a few other cars that used the full audio animatronic layout, just kind of highlighted when they didn't do that.
I've watched a couple of videos of that ride on YouTube, and you know, there's Mac and a whole bunch of other things, but it looks so realistic that it almost looks like they're just projecting on everybody.
Right, and that's the amazingness that is Disney, really, is that for the most part they're not doing that. They've actually just designed these vehicles to look like their counterparts from the movie. So I think that's just a really cool part of it. And again, other than that, it is pretty much it is very much a test track. It's got a little bit different layout for your speedy section, and then of course they also have the really cool effect of you pull in and Luigi is going to go ahead and fix up your car. I don't know if you've heard about that part, but a curtain opens, you see a mirror where you can see your car, and then the curtain closes. And I've been told they changed the paint job. For us, it was he was going to put white wall tires on our car, and the mirror, the curtain closes, curtain opens back up. You've got white wall tires on your car. You know, of course, your car feels like it's being jacked up, and you hear the guns going to pull the tires off and put new tires back on. It's a very cool effect. The only thing that I will say is, it was something that I was watching for because I'd heard about it. It was almost such a smooth transition, and it almost looked so believable on the window or on the mirror. I don't know if you would have noticed it if you weren't looking for it.
Like people, yeah, I've heard from other people that people end up just looking at themselves in the mirror and waving at it, and they don't actually realize that something is happening.
Right, you don't really realize that something has changed in between point A and point B. But again, I think overall it's a very good attraction. It's very well themed throughout. There's a little bit of, and I'll say this, I feel like Disneyland overall, both parks have a lot more of the, I almost want to call it like the cattle movement, so you go back forth in a line, you just kind of zigzag within a section, which I don't like as much. I like that there are a lot of attractions that Disney doesn't do that way, where they're actually just walking you through different sections. But even inside of doing that at Radiator Springs Racers, they still take you into different sections through the line. So you like walk through this area where you see a bunch of old oil, glass oil bottles, and that was really cool. And another section where you see a lot of old license plates and things that are very well tied into the whole Radiator Springs Racers motif. That makes for very good theming in the attraction line, and I feel like makes it a little bit easier to wait in line for that.
It seems like Walt Disney World, especially since they have so much more space, there's a lot less of the ziggy-zag type queues, and they're a little bit more sprawling, I guess.
Right, and I totally think that that's what it is. It's the amount of space, and you notice this in other attractions. For example, Toy Story Mania has the same issue. Toy Story Mania is set up pretty much the exact same as it is in Disney's Hollywood Studios, as far as the ride attraction itself, and that queue actually has some zigzags going on, even at Walt Disney World. But in Disneyland, not only does it kind of zigzag, but when you get out of the attraction, you actually have to walk up, walk over, and then walk back down. And you see that in a lot of attractions at Disneyland. I feel like it's just because of the premium on space there. They actually have to walk you over the ride technology quite often, because they can't afford that extra space to walk you out a different way.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a knock against Disneyland. It's just something that I feel like you kind of notice if you've done both parks quite a few times. But anyway, like I said, overall, Radiator Springs Racers, great attraction. I didn't feel bad about waiting the 75 minutes. I wouldn't wait 75 minutes again for it, but if it was under the 40-minute mark, maybe 60 tops, I would probably consider doing it again, which to me is a pretty high praise for any attraction that I'm – if I'm willing to wait over 30 minutes for it, you know, that's kind of my mark. And of course, all of that depends on season and whatnot. But it's an attraction that I would do again.
Well, cool. What did y'all do? So what was next on your California Adventure trip?
So after we left Raider Springs Racers, we headed over to Luigi's for the tire ride that they have there. So basically they have a setup where it's somewhat similar to bumper cars, but it's also very different. Basically you have this large tire, and inside of it is a place where two people can sit down, and when the ride starts going, they've got jets throughout on the ground throughout the whole ride area. That are shooting up air, and they shoot up air into these quote-unquote tires, which are actually just kind of covers that will then trap the air so that your ride vehicle actually lifts up, much like a hovercraft or something like that. And then you actually control the vehicle by leaning forward, backward, left, or right to just go around. And, you know, there's no real goal in mind other than you can kind of bumper car into other people who are on the attraction at the same time as you.
So you're basically on top of an air hockey table.
Yes, that's exactly what it's like. You're on an air hockey table. Huh. And like I said, it's like bumper cars, but you don't have any of the jolting hits that you do. I don't know about everyone else, but I remember bumper cars, you know, sometimes I wonder how I didn't end up with whiplash at later age, as hard as some of those would hit. With these, because it's you're riding on that cushion of air, when you run into somebody else, both of yours will compress, and then they'll just kind of bounce off of one another, and you kind of keep on going. So it's a very smooth attraction, and it's a fun thing. I don't know. I almost felt like it was a little bit too light to me. My wife enjoyed it greatly. You know, she was really afraid that it was going to be hard bumps into other people and things. And so she liked the smoothness of it. But I don't know. And I also felt like it was a little bit short for what you were doing, because it's not like you can get these things barreling at one another. Pretty often it was about walking pace was about all that you were going to get going towards another against another ride vehicle or something.
That was going to be my next question, because I know that the ride that Luigi's Tires is based on was Walt's old, it was a UFO attraction in Tomorrowland. And those things would go really super fast, and kids were falling out of them, and they were super dangerous. And so I was going to ask you if they'd made any effort to slow them down.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how that effort was obtained, but we weren't going very fast, and I didn't see anybody else going very fast either. I actually made it our goal to get as close to the exit with our vehicle by the end of the ride, so that when it lowered down, and you know what, we accomplished it. We got all the way to the exit, and when it lowered down, we stepped off and stepped right out the exit gates. And hey, if you're looking for a goal to that attraction, bump into a couple of people, and when it starts feeling like it's getting close to the end, let's see how close you can get to the exit gate.
Oh man!
So that kind of made up what Luigi's Tire what Luigi's Tire ride was. From there, we headed over to the Mater Tractor ride, and again, you know, I very seldom know the actual names to these attractions, and
no, I'm pretty sure it's called Mater Tractor Ride.
Well, there you go. And if it's not, they need to rename it to Mater's Tractor Ride instead of, I believe it's actually Mater's Junkyard Jamboree. Now that I take a little quick look at my map and cheat on this, Mater's Junkyard Jamboree or Mater's Tractor Ride, which for California Adventure, I'm going to say that I feel like this was the biggest surprise from an attraction that I had all day. And that's probably somewhat because I had pretty low expectations from this attraction. You know, it's a very small attraction, feels like something that people are just going to take their kids on as something to kind of keep them busy. And they've got multiple tractors that are pretty much just doing figure eights, I think. In in this little section, and you're behind the tractor in a kind of a carriage type setup. But the carriage is actually allowed to sway behind your tractor. So as they're putting you in these figure eights, the trailer sways to the left or sways to the right based upon what the current pull on you is. Sounds like a pretty laid back attraction, right?
I feel like there's going to be some higher speeds involved.
That was pretty much the issue, and it wasn't watching the attraction. It does not go that fast, but the way that trailer swings you left and right and left and right, and it is not rough by any stretch, but you feel like you're pulling some G's in these things sometimes, because it starts to go to the inside and you realize your tractor's going the other way and you're like, oh, here it comes. And sure enough, it will whip you to the other side of that tractor and you will be, and again, so weird because it was never really that rough, but you were whipped very quickly. And it was a really, really fun attraction. Again, had a very, very short wait. And I think that's because of how it looks. It doesn't look like it's going to be any big deal. But it was a great attraction. I enjoyed it. It didn't last for too long because if you would have been in there for a very long time, you'd probably gotten sick and, seen breakfast, lunch, or dinner, whatever meal you just had again. But it lasted just that right amount of time. It was a really, really fun attraction. So, that is definitely one that I would suggest that people hit. If they're going to find themselves at California Adventure. And again, it's going to look like one that you're going to want to skip. Do not skip that attraction. It's going to be a lot of fun. So that pretty much covered the entirety of Cars Land. I would also say that just the overall theming of that area is awesome. Just awesome. You've got the Cozy Cone Motel. Each one of the cones is actually devoted to a different food product. So there's one where they serve cone con carne, another one where they serve churro bites. I believe there's another one that serves ice cream cones. All these different things. It's a very cool setup, and you very much feel like you're in that movie. You are in Radiator Springs when you're in this area.
That's awesome. That's did you say it was chili con carne?
Chili con carne, I believe, yes, was the food served there. The one thing that I would say is if I was actually going to buy something, it could get a little long. Fortunately, when we went by, the lines were all short. I was going to get the churro bites, but churro bites are $5.19. A churro is $3.75. Unless you just really want the dipping sauce, just go get yourself a churro from somewhere else in the parks. Churros. Yes, I am all about the churro. I do not need my dipping sauces. So I quickly got out of line and said, you know what, I'm going to go have a churro somewhere else. They actually also have a meeting area, I believe. I saw Mater out there a few times. He was out there, so they've got some meet and greet opportunities out there. But like I said, it's very, very cool to see Disney putting the work into theming an area, especially an area that's so devoted to a specific movie, and getting it so right, really. Being able to see the different things that you would expect to see in Radiator Springs.
Yeah, that sounds awesome, man.
Yep. So after we finished up there, we headed over to the Paradise Pier area and went and did the... I think we started off with Toy Story Mania, which, again, pretty much the exact same attraction as Disney Hollywood Studios, which, for those who don't know, you are on ride vehicles. And I greatly enjoy this attraction. The only issue I have with it is the wait time. And it's not because I don't feel like it's worth it. It's because this attraction is one in which you are playing a game. So you put on 3D glasses, are in the ride vehicle, and the ride vehicle takes you from a set of screens to another set of screens to another set of screens, and in each set of screens, you have a gun in front of you in which you're required to do something like one of the games is you're throwing pies, and then in another game you're shooting balloons or you're breaking plates, all of these different things, and it's keeping a tally of your score as well as your accuracy on the screen underneath you, and then as you reach the end, it actually tells you who got the highest score in your car, what's the highest score they've had in the last month, what's the highest score for the day, all of these things, which for me, I very much have a addictive personality when it comes to gaming, and so I want to go get on this ride again and again and again, but it was sitting at, I believe, a 40 or 50 minute wait, and the one in Disney's Hollywood Studios can go, I've seen it go over 2 hours. And so it's very hard to feed that desire to go again and again with those kind of waits. But like I said, it's still a great attraction. One thing that was interesting about this is with this attraction and a lot of the other ones, it's kind of cool to see that in Southern California, all of this stuff is done outdoors. So whereas Walt Disney World, pretty much every single queue is going to be indoors for the majority of the queue. The Toy Story Mania queue was all outdoors. The Luigi's Tire Ride, actually even the attraction itself, that one and the Mater's Tractor Ride were both completely outdoor attractions. And that's just something that you don't see as much at Walt Disney World, and I know it has a lot to do with the weather at those two places. But it's a lot of fun, you know, to be able to just kind of stand outside and enjoy the awesome weather that is Southern California, and to get to do all these different things. So again, Toy Story Mania, same thing as Disney's Hollywood Studios. If you've done it one, you've done it at the other one.
So is it, I've not done, Toy Story Mania at Hollywood Studios, but mm-hmm. I have in the Magic Kingdom in Tomorrowland done Buzz Lightyear's Space Ranger Spin.
Is it
similar, like that ride, you shoot, you know, your little gun, and at the end you have a score, and whoever scored more wins. Is it similar to that?
It's similar in the general idea, but with Toy Story Mania, where Buzz Lightyear is all about actual objects. So, you know, it's actually on the on the People Mover platform.
Right.
So it's always moving. And you're just riding by, and you're seeing different things, and they all have little targets on them you can shoot. Toy Story Midway Mania, actually, you're looking at a screen, you've got your 3D glasses on, and so your gun in front of you is actually, it's got a little pull string on it that you use to fire with, and you're actually firing into the screen, and it does an awesome job of being able to read where that gun is at, when you pull the trigger, or pull back the pull string, I'm sorry, you know, heaven forbid we should use a trigger in Toy Story, but and so it actually all happens on that screen. So, I mean, in some ways it's similar, but to me it's a very different experience. Plus, with the layout that they have, they move you from one type of game, and then your ride vehicle moves forward into the next type of game, and your ride vehicle is actually going to stop in front of each set of screens for a specific amount of time.
Okay. So it's a play this, move to the next one, play it, move to the next one, play it.
Exactly. And then you're going to reach the end, and at that point it gives you the scoring. And I like the ability, and I wish they would add this to Buzz Lightyear. With Buzz Lightyear, pretty much the only person you can play against is the other person in your car.
Right.
You know, which I smoked my wife for the points, but I will admit that she did have higher accuracy than me. So, you know, we can call that one a split. But with Toy Story Midway Mania, they're actually showing you the score, high score for the day, high score for the week, all these different things. Whereas at Buzz Lightyear, you know, you don't get to see that. And I think that's a really cool thing. And again, it makes me want to play that again to try to better my score. You know, I've already beat the person in my car, but now I've got to beat that person who has the high score for the day or something.
Right. So it's kind of like more of an arcade.
Exactly. It's very much that feel to it. You know, and of course Disney still has the nice little outdoor arcades where you can spend your real money after you've spent your $92 for your ticket. We didn't partake in that. We partaked in Toy Story's Midway Mania. So.
Well, so I've like I said before, I've not been to California Adventure. Is it about the same size as Disneyland?
Feels like very much the same size. You know, I believe, and you know, I'm sure someone will correct me later, that it actually was originally a parking lot that Disney had, you know, and was actually the reason for the creation of their parking garage. But it was a pretty, if that's the case, it was a pretty significant parking lot, because yes, I do feel like it is very much the same size as Disneyland proper, which, you know, for somebody coming from Disney World, while it is a large park, it still feels much, much smaller than, you know, some of the parks at Walt Disney World. Again, kind of coming back to that space issue that you see, mm-hmm. Because Disney is hemmed in on all sides by, you know, the rest of Anaheim, California, especially that which has grown up around it. You know, so they've got a very high priced real estate where they're at. They're not going to grow out of it, I don't think. But they've made a very good use of it. And yeah, so if you've been to Disneyland, you're kind of talking, I feel like, a little bit smaller than Magic Kingdom, and California Adventure is going to be about the same size as that.
Okay. How much of that is taken up by Cars Land? It sounds like Cars Land is pretty massive.
Yeah, you would think so, but actually it's a very I feel like it's a very small section overall. Now, you know, it's one of the major, they've really got about, I would say probably three major areas there. They've got the Paradise Pier area, the Cars Land area, the Hollywood Land area, which, you know, they finally put Tower of Terror over there. But up until then, I would say that was a lot of space for not a lot of stuff. And then I guess they have one other area in the Grizzly Peak area, which is an awesome themed area, because it falls into that whole national forest land thing. But the big attraction there is the water ride, and I never want to ride a water ride when I'm at a theme park, because I don't want to walk around wet for the rest of the day. So.
Me neither, man. I don't understand why anybody would want to walk around with wet socks.
Yes, that is a frightening concept to me. You know, and a lot of times it was cool enough there that I was wearing blue jeans. I'm not walking around with wet blue jeans for the rest of the day. I'm sorry, that is not a thing to me.
Right. Let me ask you this. Now, there are three rides in California Adventure that I am super curious about, and I want to know if you rode them.
Okay.
Mickey's Fun Wheel.
Mickey's Fun Wheel. So we did ride Mickey's Fun Wheel.
Did you do the real moving cars?
We did not do the real moving cars because, first of all, my wife would have never, ever, ever allowed it. And second of all, because I would never, ever, ever have allowed it. she didn't want to do it so much because, you know, she's it would have just been way too much for her. And I have an intense fear of heights. So getting on Mickey's Funwell was more than I wanted to really do, but I could not pass up the experience to get to see everything from that height. Mm-hmm. And it was totally awesome getting up there, but I saw the swinging cars on this thing. I would have been in the floor of my car for the entirety of the ride, begging them to get me off when it reached the bottom. That looked frightening to me. That looked more frightening than any other attraction and I went and did California Screamin'. This looked 20 times more frightening than California Screamin' ever would look to me. Just because those cars, it looks like it's a very slow attraction, and as far as the wheel itself, it is. Those cars swing a lot, and they're not staying directly, you know, perpendicular to the ground the entire time either. They get a lot of swing left and right into them. So no, I did not ride those cars. You are more than welcome to when you go to California Adventure, though.
Oh, I will. California Screaming was actually my second one. How was that?
Oh, California Screaming was a great roller coaster ride. You know, and roller coaster is not really something that Disney's known for. You know, we've got We've got the mountains, so, you know, Big Thunder and then Space Mountain. But this is more of your standard, you would expect to see it on a, you know, and again, it falls under the Paradise Pier area because it's something you'd expect to see it appear or, you know, even some of the other parks that you might go to. But it's really, really well put together for a roller coaster. It's very, very smooth. It's all steel construction. It's got one loop in it. Not a bad loop. Actually, I would say the worst part of that attraction was the loop, but not because, you know, again, for anybody who's ridden roller coasters, you never feel, you know, you're going through that loop so fast, you're being pushed into your seat, never really feel the loop. It did get a little bumpy through the loop, which I just wonder if it's not them slowing down the cars as they go through it.
Probably so.
Yeah, so it felt a little bit like that. I do like the fact that they don't use the standard, you know, click, 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 and use gravity to get things going, but that they actually have the acceleration. So you kind of come in and you're sitting just a little bit over the water, and then it just shoots you forward, very much like Rock and Roller Coaster.
So that's what I was going to ask you. Is it similar to Rock and Roller Coaster in yes. speed and intensity and all that stuff?
Yes, I would say speed and intensity. However, I would say this one's smoother than Rock and Roller will knock your head around quite a bit, at least in my experience. This one, I actually had the opportunity. This was another attraction my wife wasn't going to do, so I went and waited in line, got to the front, and a single rider or another single rider came up, and I'd asked to sit in the front, so he came up and sat with me. And as we were leaving the attraction, he's like, hey, I've got a fast pass that expires in 5 minutes if you want it. So I got to fast pass that ride immediately back on.
Nice.
And then so got to ride in the very back. So I've experienced this from the front and then immediately into the back.
What do you recommend?
Not something you normally get to do. I recommend the front. The back really didn't feel that much. There are a lot of roller coasters where the back, it seems like a bigger experience just because of the way everything works. It didn't really seem like that to me. The back just threw me around a little bit more than the front did. Neither was bad, but it did seem like my head got knocked around a bit more from the back. So but like I said, a very, very smooth roller coaster overall, and just a, you know, it's a very nice addition to give you a little bit of a thrill ride, which you don't always get to see in the Disney parks as much, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then did you do Goofy's Sky School?
I did not do Goofy's Sky School. Yes, there were a few attractions that, you know, and you feel like when the lines are as short as they are, you're going to be able to cover everything. But I did not get to do Goofy's Sky School, which, of course, is another coaster that I would have liked to have done. And I also didn't get to do Ariel's Undersea Adventure, you know, which I want to experience all the Disney attractions. So I wanted to do that one as well, and didn't get to get either one of those marked off my list. So those are both top of my list for my next trip to California Adventure.
Yeah, and Goofy Sky School, I don't remember what the name of the coaster that's like it in the Animal Kingdom is, but it's one of those, I think they call them like mouse roller coasters, where it never banks.
And it's so you're thinking... Is it Dinosaur? Is it that Countdown to Extinction one or whatever? The one that's over in Dino Land?
Possibly, yeah. That they just never bank, and you go up the chain, and then it's back and forth and back and forth, and then the ride vehicle starts to spin, and you go back and forth on this, just like you were talking about with the line for Radiator Springs and stuff. It's just...
Yeah, and I've been on that one in Animal Kingdom, and I think that's the Triceratops spin over there.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Yes, yeah, and that is a, you know, that makes me even sadder that I missed out on the Goofy Sky School, because that is a very cool change up to the roller coaster genre, I guess, overall. Being able to have the actual vehicle spinning and everything just really adds to the overall experience, I feel like. And it's nice because they can do that in a small area and still create a very fun experience. So,
yeah,
that, like I said, that just makes me a little bit sadder that I missed that one.
Did you do Heimlich's choo-choo train?
I did nothing in a Bugs Land, because I saw that the Bugs Land, it said, you know, if you are under this height, you'll have even more fun, or something to that effect on the map. So I decided I would not make that a priority. And again, I missed out on some things that were a priority. So
yeah, well, I'm just looking at Heidenlick's choo-choo train here, and it looks like a family fun time.
That's right. And I'll tell you this, Heimlich is a little scary to me now, because I got to sit and watch the Pixar, I believe it's the Pixar Play Parade, the parade that actually happens in California Adventure, which, very weird to see the parades at Disneyland and at California Adventure, because their parades, and maybe they've changed this at Walt Disney World in very recently, they actually put enough distance between the parade vehicles that they can regularly have stops and allow people to cross mid-parade.
Huh.
So you'll have a parade section go by, and then they'll quickly open the crosswalk, which I think it's a good thing. It's just very weird when you're not used to seeing that. I'm used to seeing them much closer together, and you're pretty much stopped for the duration of the parade. But again, as we keep kind of coming back to, I think because of the limited space they have, it's very hard to create routes around the parade, which is what Walt Disney World has all over the place. And so the parades can be much more, can create a lot more traffic jams than probably what they do at Walt Disney World. But the Pixar parade at California Adventure, it's a very short parade. I feel like it was only about 5 sections. My wife said the same thing. She felt like it was very short as well. But again, what frightened me about Heimlich is that Heimlich is actually one of the characters in that parade, and Heimlich's made up out of about 5 sections there, and each section is independent. So there are times when Heimlich is all together, and there are times when the pieces of Heimlich are dancing at different points on the street. And I'm sorry, but that mental image is not something that's going to leave me soon, and left me a little frightened. But I feel like I saw a couple of reused floats from some, you know, other parts, which, you know, Disney's not anything new from Disney. They regularly do this, and I don't feel like it's a bad thing. I did like, you know, they had a Monsters, Inc. section. The only really big surprise to me in that parade was that it was ended by Mater, and that was all of Cars that there was in that parade.
Really?
Yeah. So you've got an entire land devoted to this Pixar movie, and then you have Mater, and that's the entirety of the representation of Cars in this parade. So why Disney chose to do it like that, I don't know, but you know, that's their decision to make, not mine.
Well, yeah, that I didn't notice when I was at Disneyland. We were leaving just as the evening parade started, and we didn't have any need to cross the street, so I didn't notice if they were doing it there. But that's interesting. I know at Walt Disney World, when we were in the Animal Kingdom, they had started a parade, and they had tape on the ground, you know, kind of telling you where to go. And I was sitting there going, man, does somebody put tape here every single day?
Yes, they do. And I have been that guy who gets to put the tape on the ground, and then as soon as the parade's over, you get to pull the tape back up. Actually, if you go to Hollywood Studios, you'll notice a lot of their sections don't have to be taped. Sometimes I go ahead and tape them anyway, but they actually have laid, it looks like maybe brass or something, into the street where those parade areas are. So where they would normally have to lay tape, there's actually little brass lines in the street that actually mark off the parade areas where you can sit, where you can't sit, all those sorts of things they have to use tape for.
Well, that's smart.
So yeah, there's your little insider into the taping. But yes, there is someone who has to tape and not and then pull up the tape for every single time that happens.
Ooh, boy.
Yeah, wouldn't that be a lot of fun? So something else you need to hit if you're at California Adventure is the Aladdin show. And that show has been there for, I don't know how long. It's been there for quite a while, because this was actually a show that I remember going to the last time I visited Disneyland, which was quite a few years back. And it's the Aladdin, a musical spectacular. It walks you through the story of Aladdin, which, you know, Most people have seen the movie more than once. It's come in, it's come out of the vault, gone back in the vault, quite a few times lately. And I think, did they not do a theatrical re-release not too long ago?
Yeah, maybe a few years ago.
Yeah. So this is an old movie we're talking about, an old attraction we're talking about, but it's still so much fun. And the thing that makes this show, I guess not attraction but show, is the genie. I cannot imagine having to work with the genie in this show, because I don't think that everyone else knows what the genie will say before the show starts. He will bust out with, you know, topical jokes concerning Justin Bieber, Kim Kardashian, you know, and just the most random things you can ever think of. I remember at some section, he suddenly broke out and started, you know, just doing random dances. Spent probably 5 minutes talking to Jafar, just throwing out random one-liners, and finally said, you know, I can go on if you want. He almost had me rolling in the aisle laughing so hard. And again, you know, it's covering a story that we've already seen. We already know what's going to happen. It's kind of fun to hear the songs again. But by and large, would kind of be a forgettable show at the end if not for the genie being in the show. And the genie being in the show and doing what he does turns this into something that I feel like you've just got to see.
Hmm. Yeah, you don't hear that much about shows anymore. You know, World of Color and Fantasmic are huge, you know, but the smaller shows are usually just kind of like, we got a show if you need some time to sit, you know.
Right, exactly. And most of the shows are very much if you go and watch the show one time, don't ever come back and see the show again. I've done the Indiana Jones Stunt Spectacular at Hollywood Studios multiple times.
Yeah.
It's the exact same show every time.
It sure is.
which is great for the people who are coming in to watch the show, not so much for me. I feel like this show, you know, I remember the genie being very funny the last time I was there. The genie was very funny this time I was here. I would probably go back to that show the very next day just to see if the genie was going to change it up on the next day. It was that humorous to me overall as a show. So, huh. So yeah, that's definitely one that I feel like if you saw it on your map, you'd be like, that's something that we can skip. And that's something I would highly suggest you not skip if you're going to do California Adventure.
Okay. Well, let's switch gears here and move over to day two of your trip in Disneyland.
Yeah, so day two, we got over to Disneyland again. We did not catch the Mickey and Friends parking area before it had closed for the day. But we had learned from yesterday's experience of being in the Simba lot, ended up parking in the Toy Story lot. And I only say that because the Toy Story lot has a tram. So if you can't park in the parking structure, just go to the Toy Story lot. You get to jump on a bus. The bus will take you, you know, almost directly to the main gates, and makes for a much easier start to the day, as I feel, and then also a very much easier end to your day when you know that you don't get to look forward to that same walk all over again. So of course, you know, we got to the park, didn't have to get our tickets, walk in, and you know, it's very much I'm in the Magic Kingdom, but I'm in the original. You know, and just kind of this is so awesome. I'm walking into, you know, Walt's original, the original thing that he laid out.
Yeah. You know?
And so you walk through, you got the train station right there, the nice topiary, walking underneath the tunnel. The first thing I was really hit with, though, this castle is really small.
It is. Oh, my gosh. Compared to Cinderella's castle.
Exactly, or even I feel like maybe Belle's castle at Disneyland Paris is. I feel like it was maybe a smaller one as well, but yeah, I haven't looked it up to be sure, but I feel like this is probably close to the smallest, if not the smallest, castle out there. And I wonder if that's not something to do with height restrictions or whatnot, but yeah, it's a very very short castle, which doesn't detract at all. It's very surprising again. Being somebody who comes from the more Walt Disney World swing of things and then coming and seeing something like that. So the overall experience for Disneyland it's interesting to me because, again, I've visited Walt Disney World for years And when you come to Disneyland, again, if you've been at the Magic Kingdom, you feel like you've done a lot of attractions at Disneyland, because they do share a lot of attractions, but in somewhat different ways. You know, so for example, I felt like Space Mountain at Disneyland was much smoother to me than it was at Walt Disney World. And I don't know what your experience was.
100% true. Space Mountain at Disneyland is awesome.
Yes. So, I mean, yeah. You know, I feel like when I'm at the one at Walt Disney World, either my hands are going to get chopped off if I dare to hold them up. Possibly the top of my head if I don't shrink it down. And I'm going to get jolted back and forth, back and forth, back and forth for the entirety of the ride.
Yes.
Not at all the experience that I had when I was at the when I was there at Disneyland.
My goodness, yeah, you hit it on the head. Disney World was the first time I ever went on Space Mountain, and just the drops feel incredibly steep, and the turns are terrible. And just at Disneyland, it is an enjoyable experience. It's fun.
Exactly. And I also wonder if it doesn't help that I think Disneyland makes it darker than Walt Disney World. And not being able to see the track also helps a little bit with the whole, I feel like my head's going to come off at the next turn experience of being on an indoor coaster like that. But yes, I do feel like Disneyland does have the superior Space Mountain. I also really enjoyed the fact that they brought back, 20,000 Leagues, even if, you know, with the new Finding Nemo motif.
Right. Did you go on that?
Yeah, we actually did go on that. You know, it reminded me of the Finding Nemo at the Living Seas now, you know, where they finally replaced the movie that everybody tried to skip as quickly as possible at the Living Seas, with the People Mover Finding Nemo attraction. Kind of had a similar feel, you know, where they've got the different projections of Finding Nemo throughout it. And it was just it was a cool little ride to get on. You know, it kind of reminds me of the dark rides and things. It was just fun. It was a fun attraction. So yeah, you know, and I like the idea that we're kind of getting to see, you know, that they're not just raising over everything that was the classic Disney, but they're finding ways to update and still give you kind of the feel of what, you know, 20,000 Leagues might have been like.
Yeah. Yeah. It certainly seems strange nowadays that the submarines actually go underwater and like physically move around in that pool with the, you know, windows being screens now and stuff. Like the actual physical movement of the submarine seems almost, I guess, unnecessary.
Right. But you want to see that because that's what tells you, hey, they actually still care enough to, you know, to make this attraction not just pleasing to when you're actually in it, but it's also very pleasing to look at when you're just sitting there watching the submarines go by.
Yeah, it's cool to see when you're waiting for the monorail.
Yeah, which, you know, the monorail was, it was a lot of fun to ride on. We did not get to ride in the front of the monorail like you did.
Oh.
So we didn't get to experience that, and it was really surprisingly crowded to me for only having just the two stops, right? Because it's Downtown Disney and then back in the parks.
Yep.
Yeah, so there were an awful lot of people who wanted to get on it. But, you know, it was nice to kind of get to ride along, take a break, take a seat, not have any air conditioning, but have the windows open, so it was perfectly all right. you know, and just to get to ride through. And I will agree with you, I do like the... what is that? The Mark 7, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do like the Mark 7 monorails. Those are pretty sweet looking.
Beautiful.
Yes, and well designed inside as well.
Right.
So yeah, that was really cool. The Matterhorn.
Did not get to go on the Matterhorn when I was there. Oh, it kills me.
The Matterhorn is a classic attraction, and you need to ride it because it's a classic attraction. The Matterhorn jumbled me around so horribly that I would not look forward to going on it again personally.
That's what I've heard. Then they just like a year ago changed the ride vehicles, and the old ones were great. I've heard, again, never been on it, but the new ones are just terrible.
Yeah, yeah. All that I know is my head was being thrown from one side to the other, back and forth, back and forth. I was, you know, knocking into the sides of the right vehicle. The one thing that I will say for the right vehicle, though, is I'm a big guy. You know, I'm 5'11", and, you know, and a lot of times I end up with my legs, like, pushed into the seat in front of me or something. That was not the case on this ride. They've done those actually very well. I was actually able to sit Indian style, you know, with my legs crossed over. I was able to sit with my legs crossed over in this ride vehicle. So it was very comfortable, except for when it was moving and knocking me from side to side.
So as long as it's sitting very still, it's quite comfortable.
It's quite comfortable. But, you know, still, again, it's kind of the nostalgia aspect of it that I wanted to ride it, because this was something that's been here for so long. It's such a Disneyland staple. You have to ride it, I feel like, just for that. And plus, you know, it dips down into the water. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Give you a little splash at the end.
Yeah. You know, and I also got to have a new experience for Disney, which I'm always excited when I get to have a new experience for Disney. I got to walk off of a ride.
Ah, you got stuck, did ya?
I did. We were on the Roger Rabbit, the little spin ride they've got in Mickey's Toontown. And I probably should have noticed, you know, I probably should have been a little bit more wary that the ride had just been closed. And so it was 101 reopened, and I'm like, sweet, the line will be short, let's go. So we, you know, run through the queue, which, by the way, take the time to go through that queue, because the very few things that I remember about my first visit to Disneyland, I remember that queue, because that queue told me that Disney knew how to do it better than anybody else when it comes to theming and when it comes to queue design. That queue is incredible. It does not have any of the switchbacks that you can see, and it's very good about doing what Disney, I feel like, kind of is evil about in some ways, in that it takes you around that corner and you can see the next part of the line, the end of the line, and then it veers you off to the other side and you're deeper into the wait. So you always feel like you're almost there, and you're almost never really there until you actually just come upon it. You're like, oh, here's the end of the queue. But I like that, not just feeling like I'm just being, you know, zigzag back and forth. And throughout the queue, there are different things to read. There are different things to look at that come from Roger Rabbit. And like I said, just the overall queue design there is awesome. I suggest going there, if for no other reason than to see the queue. But again, it had been closed, so we're weaving our way in and out of this queue, get on the attraction, riding it through. And by this point, my wife is, you know, do not spin the car. Which makes it a bit more boring, I'll say. But, you know, I knew that I had to spend the rest of the day with her. And so I was a smart husband, and I said, okay, we'll just ride through it. And still, you know, a very fun dark ride, just kind of goes through different scenes from Roger Rabbit. We get almost to the end of the attraction, and all of a sudden it stops. Which, you know, if you've been on a Disney attraction, isn't unheard of. A lot of times if they're loading or unloading people who are on a wheelchair or something like that, just need more time.
Right, most of them even have an audio track to tell you what's happening. I know Haunted Mansion has a special track to let you know that that's happening.
Right, so that's not that unheard of, but we kept waiting, and then all of a sudden the lights came on, and I'm like, oh, that doesn't bode well for the end of this attraction. And sure enough, I think what had happened is that one ride vehicle had collided with another one, and they pointed it out to me. The ride vehicles may be touched. They did not, you know, there was no extreme collision. No one should be filing for whiplash against Disney.
There was no explosion.
Right, no explosion, which was a bit disappointing to me. But, you know, it was awesome to say that I have now walked through, even if it was the last 20 feet, I have walked through the end of it, or I've walked through a Disney attraction and been walked out. And, you know, and just to get to see, you know, they handled it very professionally, you know, basically just walked to a halfway point. Two cast members did. One started taking people backwards through the attraction. The other one was working his way out. they got us all out pretty quickly, and now I can tell people that I've actually had to walk out of a Disney attraction. So
did you see behind the scenes?
I did not see behind the scenes, other than what you can see more when they have the lights on. They did not take me out of cast member exit or anything like that. They just kind of walked you to the end and said, "All right, there you go. Now get out."
Have a good day.
That's right. We've got to fix this thing now. So
yeah, that happened to Claire and I when we were in Disneyland at Pirates. Yeah, I told this story on episode one, I think, but it had just reopened and we went over there and we were first in line. We ran to the entrance. We got on there, and in the scene where the cannon fire's happening, the guys are up to the right on the ship or on the castle, and there's a ship to your left. We sat there for probably 5 minutes. There were about seven or eight boats just crammed up against each other. So yeah, you get the kind of chronic breakdown for a while, yes. Until they actually fix it.
Right. And I will say Pirates did, Pirates also fell in the list of things that we could not get to, and it killed me.
Oh, because I love
the Pirates ride in Disneyland. But it was 101 quite a few times throughout the day, so it was broken down. Not so sure that I'm so sad that I missed it now, if that's kind of its MO. But
did you get to eat at the Blue Bayou?
We did get to eat at the Blue Bayou, and the Blue Bayou, the setting was awesome. Being able to, of course, we showed up, told them we wanted the waterside table, didn't care about the extra 45-minute wait, and they seated us right up against the water, which is just so cool because you get much more the experience of being inside in the dark outside while inside a restaurant in the middle of the day,
which is
so cool. And they had a nice little two-person table set up for us. The downside to that restaurant is I did my reading, and everyone said you have to get the Monte Cristo sandwich at the Blue Bayou. I'm here to tell you, you do not have to get the Monte Cristo sandwich at the Blue Bayou.
Uh-oh.
Yes. It's something that will be for some other people. It was not for me. What I got was a sandwich that had been cut into four parts, and I believe was turkey, ham, and Swiss, mm-hmm. and had been deep fried. And this was not a surprise to me. I understand how Monte Cristo is made. The bread inside of the deep fry somehow sucked up so much grease, and then they bring it out to you, and they put powdered sugar on it, and it comes with three dipping sauces, all sweet. Mm. And I was desiring lunch, and to me this felt more like a dessert type of thing. So I don't know, it just was not for me. Again, I'm not trying to say that it's not a horrible thing or anything. I'm just saying it's probably not for everybody, and I'm part of the everybody that it's not for. I think it would have been good if I would have had like a party of four, and we ordered one to kind of split, and each one of us took a fourth of it, because mm-hmm. it was pretty good to start with. It just, I personally don't want to take on that amount of grease and heavy food and then go out and walk in the parks for the rest of the
right.
Day.
Yeah.
but like I said, other than that, and that I should have just gone with I think they had some jambalaya or something that I was tempted by and should have just followed my gut there. The theming of that area, though, very cool. Definitely someplace that I would go back to. Just, I just wouldn't order the Monte Cristo the next time. So,
well, that's fair.
So we did get, yeah. So I, I'm not gonna hate on it, but just Monte Cristo's not for me.
Did you get to go on Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, or was that still closed?
Big Thunder was actually closed for refurb. I think I've heard they're doing a major refurb on that one. But that was the only thing that was actually permanently closed for refurb while we were there. So I feel like we were pretty lucky there.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew that it was closed, but I wasn't sure about the reopening of it.
Yeah. Yeah. We were crossing our fingers that they would maybe decide to reopen earlier. I've heard rumor here and there of, sometimes if they've got something close for a refurb, they might soft open. But yeah, it was totally silent while we were there. So It was definitely down and and being worked on. So,
What about Haunted Mansion? Did you get to do that?
Oh, Haunted Mansion. Oh, and you know, and I feel like we've maybe discussed the Haunted Mansion,
the holiday overlay
Nightmare Before Christmas. Yes, the holiday overlay.
I hate it. We discussed it to the point where I hate it.
I feel like you could not be more wrong. I'm sorry, but that's, you know. Now, here's what I will say. I've now done the Haunted Mansion holiday twice. I've done it one at Tokyo Disneyland and now this time at Disneyland. The one at Tokyo Disneyland, I could kind of take or leave. It very much felt like the Jingle Cruise, in that they kind of stuck a few. The Tokyo Disneyland version just kind of stuck some Haunted Mansion or some Nightmare Before Christmas stuff throughout the Haunted Mansion. And it felt like it was kind of pasted on over what was there.
See, that's exactly how I feel Disneyland is.
Okay, so Disneyland must have changed what they did because it was awesome. So, like, as you walk into the, you know, you walk into the attraction, they've changed out all the paintings in the stretching room.
I will say the stretching room is great.
Yeah, they changed out all the paintings, and they actually have Jack above you at the very end. They're using projection to put Jack above you. You walk in to get on your Doom buggy, and they've added an entire Nightmare Before Christmas theme behind where the Doom buggy loading area is. You get into the attraction, and the dining room scene, completely different. They've put a Christmas tree in there. They've, you know, put characters from Nightmare Before Christmas throughout it. The graveyard scene was completely different. They had put snow everywhere. They had built a mountain. It felt like a totally different attraction to me. So I don't know. Tokyo felt like pasted on. This felt like it was a whole new attraction. They had redesigned it for the Nightmare Before Christmas in the holiday season. So, you know, we can agree to disagree there, but I thought that was incredible.
And I don't like the movie either. So that may be, I walked into it going, oh my gosh, this movie, blah. So.
Well, there you go. I do enjoy Nightmare Before Christmas. It's one of the quirkier Disney films out there, I kind of feel like, and I enjoy it for that. So, yeah, if you like Nightmare Before Christmas and you like Haunted Mansion, you're going to like Haunted Mansion Holiday. And I was actually surprised. My wife agreed to go on this with me against her will because she does not like the Haunted Mansion. She's not a fan of scary rides or anything. She said, I will go on it with you. I will close my eyes throughout the ride, and then we will get off of it. And I said, okay, I'm willing to take that. She actually watched the entire ride, and she enjoyed it. She said, hey, that was a lot of fun. But it was because they had moved over to all the Nightmare Before Christmas stuff, and that doesn't frighten her as much as the a slightly darker tone that I feel like the Haunted Mansion proper kind of takes on.
I can see that making it more accessible, for sure.
So I would not want that throughout the season, but it makes for a fun little holiday thing.
Yeah, and I would agree with you that if you like Nightmare Before Christmas and you like the Haunted Mansion, then you're going to love Haunted Mansion Holiday.
On the other hand, if you say, bleh, Nightmare Before Christmas, you're not going to like it when they put Nightmare Before Christmas in your Haunted Mansion.
Maybe not going to be such a big fan.
Yeah. And of course, that does bring up the fact that the Jingle Cruise, I don't know. I felt like they threw a couple of hats on some, you know, they threw hats on the skippers, threw a couple of hats throughout the attraction and said, okay, it's Christmas.
Yeah, I've heard that that's mostly a skipper-based change.
Well, and the thing is that the skipper, to me, the spiel did not change significantly either. There were a couple of new jokes thrown in. And I will say this about the Jungle Cruise proper and probably the Jungle Cruise as well. Your skipper will make or break your experience on the Jungle Cruise.
Absolutely.
I have been on there and had the most amazing skippers and had me rolling in the floors. And I've had other skippers that have been on autopilot and have said the spiel word for word and with no emotion in it. And it's just been, I'm kind of glad this is over with.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, I don't want to put that one totally, but like I said, I do feel like the the Christmas overlay was kind of a waste there. Again, personal opinion there. Somebody is more than welcome to disagree with me at some point. So.
And then did you do? Did you get to do Indiana Jones Adventure?
I did not get to do Indiana Jones Adventure.
Oh, man.
That was another one. I have done that before. It is a totally awesome ride. But, again, wife didn't want to do it. We were running short on time as it was. And it was, I think, sitting at a 50-minute wait. So, yeah. You know, those things all together kind of make those sorts of decisions for you. So
yeah.
Yep. So, I mean, that pretty much, I think, covered the major attractions.
Did you do Splash Mountain?
Oh, yes. Thank you. I'm so sorry. I can't believe I forgot that.
Splash Mountain is my favorite.
I like Splash Mountain there a lot. You know, it's hard for me because I feel like it's been quite a while because you do get slightly wet depending on where you're sitting and
just especially which way the ride at Disneyland.
Vehicle. You know, I actually only got damp. I thought that I was going to get soaked on that attraction because I had some I think I was sitting in the third seat and in front of me were two very small children. So basically I had an unimpeded flow of water in my face. But yeah, it was actually very pleasant. Had a little bit of splash over from the side and other than that didn't get wet at all. You know, but I've always enjoyed that ride. You know, it's got a couple of the small drops and then that huge drop, which is just to me a whole lot of fun to do. And, you know, and I like the way that one goes through the story. I feel like it goes through the story totally differently in my mind than the one at Walt Disney World. And again, rusty memory at best. But
it feels much shorter.
Yes, it does. It does.
The one at Walt Disney World is almost 10 minutes long.
Is it really that long?
Yeah.
I've never actually haven't actually read the time or timed it myself. So.
I think I clocked it at 9:40.
Man, yeah. So, well, I guess one way of saying that is it's a long attraction, and the other way of saying it is you get your money's worth.
Yeah.
in that attraction, but it is a long attraction, much like the Tiki Room is also a much longer attraction
it is,
at Disneyland.
Yes.
So, yeah, I thought that Splash Mountain was a lot of fun to go on. You know, the change of the ride vehicle, it makes it a little bit uncomfortable when you don't know the person who's sitting in front of you. Because again, if you've got longer legs, your legs are on either side of a person you don't know.
Yeah.
but you know, you just kind of grin and just roll with it.
And the absence of the lap bar made me feel slightly less safe, I guess. I don't know. That last drop, I got a little bit nervous.
Mm-hmm. Hey, but you know, that just makes it a more intense attraction.
Yeah, I guess so.
So, you know.
And then the only other one that I want to ask you about, Star Tours. Did you go on that?
We did go on Star Tours. Again, that's one that once you're in, I think it's the same at Disneyland or same at Tokyo Disneyland, same at Hollywood Studios, same at at Disneyland proper.
Yeah.
And in every case, it's a great attraction. You know, I especially like the revamp that they've done to it, where you know now you've got the 3D. They actually give you the really cool 3D shades. So for most Disney attractions, you get the yellow, bright yellow with the film that wore out a long time ago. So it's always a little wavy and everything. This one, they give you the black mirror tinted kind of wrap around, almost kind of like an Oakley type glasses or something. You know, and then I feel like they made it a lot smoother. They're using digital projection now, which is great, because the film reels they were using or whatever were getting older and older, and you could definitely see the splice points on them on the old attraction. Whereas the new attraction, like I said, it's a lot better. And plus, you get the there are actually different sections to this attraction, which I'm sure you know, but a lot of people may not. They actually have a couple of different layouts to this, so you can go ride it one right after the other, and if you end up getting, you know, that random generator picks a different planet for you to visit or whatever, you'll get a totally different ride the next time through.
Yeah, I think there's 30. There's 10 different beginnings, 10 different middles, and 10 different ends, I believe. So that's like, what, 300 or something different ways you can go through that ride?
Right.
Maybe 100. Yeah. I'm bad at math.
I was about to say, what you're asking me for right now is something that I could look up and remember how to do, but I don't get to use it every day. So it's not, yes. All that we know is it is a lot of different ways that this attraction can be put together. It's, like I said, I think it's a lot of fun. Very smooth attraction. Not a long wait either.
Right.
It's been there long enough that people aren't just flocking to it by the, you know, by the hordes. I really enjoy that attraction.
Well, good. So it sounds like you had a pretty good time in California.
I did. I had a very good time in California. But of course, you know, there's one other thing that we should hit before we end the podcast, and that is the night shows.
Oh gosh. Thank you. Yes.
Yes. We've got to hit the night shows for the park. So we should probably start off with California Adventure and the World of Color.
Okay.
Oh my goodness. I am not, again, in when we're talking about Walt Disney World, Fantasmic takes my bottom spot for the night shows. Not that it's a bad show, but I just prefer the Wishes and the and Illuminations over it.
You're dead to me.
I know. This is that's your favorite, and by far, I think I might be willing to put World of Color above all the Walt Disney World shows.
Wow.
Because it is just so incredible. I mean, when they're so for those who don't know, World of Color takes place on Paradise Pier in their little lagoon area over the water, in very much the same way as Fantasmic, where there's projection on water and they've got fountains that are shooting up. But I don't know what technology they're using now. It is just, it's so much clearer than what Fantasmic is with the projections. It's just so much easier to see, so much bigger. And that pales in comparison to the fountains, because the fountains, I don't know exactly what they're doing there. These fountains look like they have been, like they're shooting out paint of different colors, lighted paint.
Huh.
Instead of water, it's just the colors are so vibrant. And of course, this was a holiday show. It was actually, you know, they kind of had Olaf hosting the show, the snowman from Frozen, hosting the show. And like I said, it was a really well put together show. It had some sections from Toy Story doing the Nutcracker Suite, and just was so cool to see this technology finally put to what I felt like was the use that it was capable of. It didn't tie in the live characters during the show like Fantasmic does, and I think it was probably better for it. It didn't need those characters to carry the show like Fantasmic does.
Okay. Yeah, I've not seen World of Color, but it really relies on the movie characters and movie clips a lot, right?
Yes, it does. It does pretty heavily rely on those. Again, the fountains also get to play a big part in that. But again, as they relate to the movies themselves, it was extremely enjoyable. Really enjoyed the technology they're using there, and I think maybe my new top show. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see it on its regular show as well. So that was kind of what World of Color was. And then that takes us over to Disneyland. And what I'm probably going to be sad to say, now again, I'm watching the holiday version of the show, but the fireworks show at Disneyland just, it didn't impress me that much. It felt shorter than a lot of the shows were at Walt Disney World or even the World of Color show. So it felt, and it may not be, it just felt that way to me. And, you know, they were changing the colors on the castle and things, but with what they are capable of doing now and what we've seen them do on the castle at Walt Disney World at Magic Kingdom, where they can actually make the castle come alive through projection, and they're doing this at Disneyland as well on It's a Small World. They run a short little holiday show there where basically they project on it and make things move around. Because the projection is so bright and so vivid, it actually looks like, you know, the whole thing can just fall down, and then they can build it back up, and they can turn it into, it looks like it's a gingerbread house or something, or whatever the case may be. Again, it just kind of felt underwhelming with the fireworks, and we did not get to see Tinkerbell, I don't know if it's because they did not integrate Tinkerbell into the holiday setup, but that was extremely depressing for me, not being able to see her after all of the stuff that I'd heard about her not simply coming down, but actually flying around during the show.
Right. So. Yeah, I've heard that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then of course, Fantasmic, you know, kind of finished up the night shows that we did. I enjoyed Fantasmic. It was, you know, it felt like kind of a morphed version of the show at Disney's Hollywood Studios.
Yeah, I think the Walt Disney World one's way better.
I would definitely agree with that. You know, I like the fact that they didn't just take the one from Walt Disney World and try to make it work. Yeah. They did change some things up. They threw in, because I don't remember the Pinocchio section that they have at Disneyland in the Walt Disney World one.
The Pinocchio and the Peter Pan Captain Hook fight on the Columbia are specific to Disneyland.
Yes, and I did like that they used the Columbia because they took advantage of something that they had. You know, so they've got the boat that rides through the lagoon, and they took advantage of the fact that boat's already there and said, hey, we can use this in our show. So, you know, I liked it. Again, didn't wow me, but I'm not a Fantasmic fan. And again, we saw this on day two, so it also kind of highlighted to me how much better the projection technology is at World of Color, seeing the projection on the water screens at Disneyland.
At Fantasmic.
Yes, yeah. At Fantasmic compared to World of Color, whatever they're using at World of Color, I think they need to be using at Fantasmic because I don't think they are right now.
Well, I can't wait to see World of Color then, because Fantasmic blew my mind with the water projection.
Yes, and if Fantasmic blew your mind, World of Color should be your new favorite show, I think.
Well, I think that's going to wrap up episode 3. We're going to be having episodes every 2 weeks, and you guys have a magical day, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.